Welcome to the Futurist Freelance podcast, brought to you by Zolo, the operating system of the solo economy. Every week, we'll be serving up an audio cocktail of expert tips, inspired insights, and stories from the frontiers of freelancing to help you grow your borderless business to new heights and live life on your own terms. So kick back, grab a snack, and let's get started. In today's episode, I bring you a conversation with Nora Dunn, who bills herself as the professional hobo. Nora is a specialist in financially sustainable travel, which I think many listeners will find both fascinating and inspirational, especially at this time of year when, even if you're already working in a freelance location independent way, you may find your mind turning to other more distant places and wondering how you could combine your life and work style to achieve your travel ambitions. Well, Nora has been walking this talk for 12 years. She knows what she's talking about. She's got some brilliant tactics and suggestions for making things happen. She's also got the big picture mindset about how travel becomes a way to live rather than something you save up for and do in between times, and how to really flip that switch so that you can have the lifestyle you want. I think you'll find it fascinating listening to Nora. And I also urge you to check out the links in the show notes if you want to see all the gorgeous places that she's lived and worked in recent years. So before you pack your bags, have a listen to this conversation and enjoy. And just a quick heads up from the Futurist Freelance, we're going to be taking a short season break in August. So next week's episode, which is a cracker, I promise you, will be our last for 4 weeks. Do make sure that you're subscribed to our feed in your favourite podcast players so you don't miss anything when we come back in September. So welcome, Nora. It's lovely to have you with us at the Futurist Freelance.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here, Maya. Thank you for inviting me.
It's lovely to have you with us on the podcast, Nora, and it was a pleasure to meet you face-to-face recently at an actual live event. I learned a little bit then about your work and what you do and your unique freelancer lifestyle. So please, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, with great pleasure. My story goes back, probably the most interesting parts of my story goes back to 2006 when I was living in Toronto, Canada, and I was running a fairly busy financial planning practice. However, there was a niggling dream that kept bugging me, much as I tried to ignore it and fill it, my life with other things that I thought would be fulfilling. Eventually, I realized that fulfillment for me was going to come in the form of long-term, culturally immersive world travel. So I took a gigantic leap of faith. I sold everything that I owned, including my business, and I took off to travel the world. I didn't know at the time what I would do, where I would go, or how I would make money. Words like digital nomad, location independent, and even remote work did not exist. So I felt like I was an island in the world doing something that no one had ever done before, which of course was not the case, but there certainly was no infrastructure for people like me. So over the years, I ended up carving out a career remotely as a freelance writer, and I wrote on the topics of travel, personal finance, and lifestyle design. Turns out all of these three topics worked very well together in that travel publications would hire me to write about finance because I was a former financial planner, and financial publications would hire me to write about travel, which paid really well. So between all of that, I ended up carving out a niche and a brand, if you will, as the finance of travel girl. And on my own website, which was theprofessionalhobo.com, I wanted to show people that full-time travel actually could be financially sustainable and that it costs a lot less than a lot of us think it does, because I surprised myself before anybody else in realizing when I was tracking my expenses that it is actually not that expensive. So I made it my mission and the goal of my website to help people design their lifestyles and arrange their affairs so they can travel long-term while working remotely.
Fantastic. And I think, I mean, that gets to the heart of it. A lot of people see, might share a dream with you. You've actually lived it and done it. But I think for an awful lot of people, the idea of world travel is something that they maybe think they'll do when they retire, when they have time when they have money, and that these things will somehow accumulate in their life if they just keep grafting away at what they're doing now. What you seem to have done is flipped that so that you've found a way to make the travel itself give you the income and the time to enjoy it while you go as well. So what's the secret? Is it a mindset thing, or is it about saving or choosing? What would you advise anybody thinking or dreaming right now?
It's a fabulous question. And I think it goes back to the moment when I did decide to sell everything, because like you say, it is usually something, travel in general is something that we normally save for retirement. And I found myself having a bit of an existential crisis somewhere around the age of 30, where I found myself realizing I wanted to get off the bus, whatever that meant. And I found myself actually saying in my head, I just want to retire. And then I thought about what that actually meant. And for me, retirement meant traveling the world, climbing the mountains of the world, volunteering around the world, breaking bread around dinner tables around the world. And I suddenly realized if I put in another 30 years into this conventional life and lifestyle that I had, which was far from uncomfortable, I might add, but if I did that, that might come at the expense of my ability to do these things around the world that I really wanted to do. I might not be willing or even able, physically or otherwise, to live the sort of lifestyle that I wanted to in my conventional retirement years. So that was why I flipped the script. In terms of how I managed to prepare and do this, I don't often suggest people do it the way I did. I do often suggest that people get the beginnings of a remote career, whether you're telecommuting, working as a freelancer, or starting a business as an entrepreneur. I do suggest that you get the foundations of that business going before you hit the road, because travel as a lifestyle is kind of like a job unto itself. And it takes a lot of work in terms of not only the logistics of planning and executing travel and moving from place to place, but then also finding your own personal rhythm and style of travel and the places you like to go to and the communities you like to find yourself mingling with. So if you can have at least some portion of that work piece in place, that will help you. Either way, I do say it is important to have savings. It's always important to have an emergency fund. So make sure you have some money saved up. And ideally, like I said, some kind of stream of income to help you along the way. It doesn't have to be fully established. You can definitely work on it as you go. I do know people who have done it this way. So the less money you have, the more savings you need. And, you know, in terms of creating a budget, that's very much a moving target. You can spend a lot of money or a little bit of money. So I actually coined a term called financially sustainable travel. And it doesn't have anything to do with budget travel. And it doesn't have anything to do with being ecologically sustainable, although in both cases, those are lovely things to have, do, and be. But financially sustainable travel is based on three main pillars. The first pillar is earning money remotely. And you can do that either as an employee, a freelancer, or an entrepreneur. And then the second pillar is about making creative, conscious spending choices on how you spend this money. And the third pillar is balancing the first two so that you can travel for as long as you want. So depending on how much money you have coming in, that will affect the decisions you make about how you choose to spend that money. And in consequently, the sort of the travel decisions that you make along the way. But initially, I was not making a lot of money. So I found really creative ways to save it. And for example, I saved over $100,000 on accommodation in my first 10 years abroad. And I just stumbled upon all these amazing ways to get free accommodation while you travel. And this is, you know, like I was far from staying in a cardboard shack on the side of the road. I was staying in really nice places, sometimes like multi-million dollar mansions, and all for free. And I literally wrote the book on it. There's five different ways to get free accommodation. But that was an example of a creative, conscious spending choice that I made in order to make the money that I had go further. And there's lots of other ways that you can do that as well. But ultimately, if we just think about balancing the pillars of the money in and the money out, you can design a life and lifestyle to be really, there's the realm of possibilities out there are astounding once you open your mind to what's possible.
That's amazing. And it seems that it's that balance then that's the key to unlocking all of this. Because when we stay mainly in one place with a certain set of costs of living and bills, and we know roughly what it costs us to live each month, we don't think of that as a movable thing. We think that's what it costs, and I have to earn that much each month, and then anything else I can save up for the fun stuff, the travel. So what you've done by selling everything and leaving that stability behind is unlock that flexibility, which gives you that choice. So that's a really exciting possibility. I think that maybe more people now have the option to entertain because we have this rise of remote employment, which can often pay really well, which was so much rarer pre-pandemic times. And anybody who wanted this lifestyle probably had to freelance and find work for themselves beforehand, I guess. So are you seeing more employed nomads on your travels? Is that becoming more of a thing?
You're absolutely right. Yes, there's a huge, I mean, we are on the leading edge of this wave, it's a tsunami even, of lifestyle opportunities for people because, of course, the pandemic necessitated that companies around the world go remote or become obsolete. So what that meant is there are millions, if not billions, of people whose jobs have now been made remote. And now as the world starts to open up again, some of these people want to see what it's like to work remotely from abroad. And not everybody wants to, you know, sell a lot and travel full time, but many people are interested in taking longer trips, 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year, and try living and traveling abroad while working remotely. And so this now means, I mean, this just what I thought was a movement prior to the pandemic was just a ripple for now. Yeah. What is this massive wave now of people who are exploring lifestyle design and working abroad. And it's really fantastic to see people really open up their mind to what they can do and where they can do it, because it's amazing. It's mind expanding. It's all the things, but it's almost like it's daunting too. There's a lot of like when the world is your oyster, where do you begin? Like, there's a lot to think about.
Well, thank goodness for your blog. And we'll have to point people towards that in the show notes so they can check out some of your adventures. For a lot of people, maybe who taking that first step, they've got the remote work thing going. So they've got their freelance business or their flexible contract or whatever, so they're not tied to being in one place. They're not locked down anymore, and they're maybe starting to grasp the opportunities that that offers in their life, but they're not ready to just backpack around the world and sell everything up and go. What sort of advice could you give people to start taking this step? But maybe they own a property or they lease a place, maybe they've got stuff, they've got ties, they've got family. How can they start to do this in a sustainably financial way, as opposed to travel being a cost on top of all those other lifestyle things they're already maintaining?
Well, there are two things that I can suggest. First of all, I before I even begin with the two suggestions, I do highly suggest that most people, if you're considering this lifestyle, do a test trip. You know, go away for a few months. Make sure it's something that you're actually interested in doing. Because a lot of us tend to fantasize about travel as a lifestyle, but perhaps the realities therein aren't exactly what you thought or hoped or wished they would be. So take that test trip. And there's a few different ways that you can execute this test trip to in a way that is going to be financially not going to be a burden. So the first is a mindset, actually, and it is to understand and embrace travel not as a vacation, but as a lifestyle. So when we think of travel, we think of vacations, which automatically becomes expensive. Why? Because you're going away for a couple of weeks, you're staying in hotels every night, you're eating all of your meals out, and you're doing touristy activities every day. That is going to add up. And if you did it right, you're going to need a vacation to recover from your vacation when you get home. However, when travel is a lifestyle and one that requires you to incorporate your full-time job, it is a completely different animal. So first of all, when you're planning it, think about the things like pace of travel. You're not going to be doing touristy things every day. In fact, think about your life at home. How often, how many times a week do you go out and do something big that takes an afternoon or a full day? You might do that on the weekends, maybe once or twice a week. You're out doing these kinds of activities. The rest of the week, In your time off when you're not working, you're simply tending to the tasks of daily life. You're exercising, you're shopping, you're doing your laundry, you're cooking, you're relaxing, because no matter where you are in the world, you need to have a little bit of downtime as well. Otherwise, this is not a sustainable lifestyle. So dramatically consider slowing down your pace of travel. If you want to actually experience a destination at all, then the time it will take you to experience that destination, to experience the same kind of things that you would in a 1 or 2 week vacation, requires 1 or 2 months of being there. Again, because you are taking that time to work as well as live there. And it is a very rewarding experience to have that ability to live in a place around the world. You know, you got to do your work wherever you are. And yes, there's always going to be a guilt factor because that beautiful beach or wherever it is beckoning. But if you have the discipline to do your work first, when you close your laptop at the end of the day, you've got this amazing new place to discover at your leisure. Right.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
This also means you will inherently be spending less money. If you're staying for a month or two somewhere, then you're staying at a place that will cost less than a nightly hotel. Mm. And it'll probably have kitchen facilities. So you have the ability to cook and shop locally, which unto itself is a rewarding cultural experience. So that's the first suggestion I have for anyone who's looking at trying is just reshape, allow yourself to reconsider what travel means to you and what sort of things you want to experience on the road. That will help you save money. The second part to saving money while doing a test trip and maintaining your home base in your home country is, if you want to save some money, you can do a home exchange. And this is an opportunity for you to allow someone to stay in your place and you can stay in their place while you're traveling. So this now gives you free accommodation. You've now just saved the number one cost of a travel lifestyle. You're now paying nothing for your accommodation. And there's a little bit of a symbiotic relationship in that someone is staying in your place as well, which is beneficial to you because there's a security presence in your home. Someone's watching over stuff. You have the ability to live locally at your destination, which is, again, a culturally rewarding experience. And there's a lot of websites out there that can hook you up with home exchanges. It needn't be as complicated as finding someone with whom you do a direct exchange. They've got points and credit systems and ways to do it to make it easy. The other thing you can do is, if you don't mind leaving your place empty or you have someone who could stay in your place, is you could explore house sitting. And that's something where, again, you'll get free accommodation. You'll be staying in somebody else's place while they travel. The difference between a home exchange and a house sitting gig is usually house sitting will involve taking care of pets or certain other tasks that might not be a responsibility of yours in a home exchange scenario. Sure. But those are great ways to test out this lifestyle and see and also not spend an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And we're going to link to your ebook about finding ways to stay places and ways to get accommodation, because I think a lot of people don't think beyond, if not the hotels, then the Airbnbs and so on, which is a step towards that living like a local, but simply not the same as being in somebody's home when they're not there, and a totally different quality. I'm wondering too about the mindset shift of being able to work when you're away. I think a lot of people have this dream of, yes, I know I'm fine to work from home and I theoretically do everything from this small laptop and I could work from anywhere, but they struggle when they're not in their familiar distraction-free home office. So do you have any advice for people who might be wondering what it's like when the beach is just over there?
Well, get used to feeling guilty. You're going to just get used to it. It's a sad reality. While you are working, you're going to feel guilty for not exploring your destination. Because again, with this travel mindset, where we're constantly feeling like, you know, I have an obligation to do all the things at the place. Right away. So, you know, feel guilty for, you know, accept that you're going to feel guilty for not exploring your destination. And then when you're out exploring, expect to feel guilty because you're not working. So,
we've got two mindsets to overcome. Yeah, we've got to overcome that 9 to 5, I should show up at work. You know, maybe I used to be an employee and now I'm freelance and I still feel I have to fit in with that kind of delivery schedule. And there's a part of you that also still thinks you're on a fortnight's holiday and you're going to miss out if you stay in your room and do your emails. So moving beyond that.
I'd be lying if I said it didn't require a monumental amount of discipline. It really yes. does. It's a it requires a lot of discipline. If you're the sort of person who I generally say when you're choosing a place to stay, if you're looking at Airbnbs and whatnot, try to find a place that has some kind of ergonomically friendly workspace that can be like a separate mm-hmm. space. So you're not combining the tasks of work and life too much. There is also the option of working at a co-working space. So this will give you mm-hmm. a dedicated workspace. If you're the sort of person who requires perhaps a more dedicated workspace, really reliable internet, perhaps you need to do calls in a private environment, so you want sound booths, or really you just need an environment that is really conducive to getting work done, co-working spaces mm-hmm. can fit that bill quite nicely.
Yeah, and they're exploding around the world now. Obviously, it's another part of this movement, this tidal wave that this industry is appearing. And I guess it's also another great place to meet and connect with people in this community, especially if you're doing it for the first time.
Very much, very much. I never understood, you know, it's funny when I was, because I did my time in the corporate cubicle. And I used to, right. when co-working spaces started being a thing, I found myself going, why would I pay money to go back into the cubicle environment? Like mm-hmm. I did that. I got paid for that and I didn't like it so much. But I was missing the point, I realize in retrospect, because there is a lot more to a co-working space and a membership at a co-working space than just an office space or a cubicle. Mm. There is that element of networking. There's that element of getting to know other people who share the same lifestyle. You can also achieve this kind of community with co-living spaces as well. Now, you do spend right. a little bit more on co-living opportunities than you might on getting your own, you know, apartment somewhere. However, again, you have the ability to be, especially as a solo traveler, it can be really rewarding because mm. you're immediately tapped into a social network of people who understand your lifestyle, who share the same yeah. goals, who also need to get work done. So you can motivate each other and hold each other accountable. And then also there's a lot to be learned. And for anybody who is freelancing out there and building businesses of one kind or another, there can be some really interesting networking opportunities mm. that come from both co-living and co-working.
Yes, definitely. And it's a tribe that is very strong and growing all the time. But because it's a community of interest and people are obviously moving around all the time, it's not the easiest place to build your networks in at first. And so maybe going to a physical location where you know there'll be other people who are working and living like you do and who get it. Because I think that's the other thing as well. It can be isolating to live, to have a work and lifestyle which is completely different to normal people who don't get it. I mean, I don't know if you find that when you go to, do you still consider Toronto home? Is that your
funny you should mention this is it's a fabulous question in the way that you said it, because after 12 years of full-time travel, it was 2018, and I really significantly badly burned out. I felt that I had lost all sense of belonging in the world. And the reason for that was, like I said earlier, there was no infrastructure for people like me when I started with this lifestyle. So I lived locally everywhere I went. And that was great. It was exactly what I wanted. However, it also meant that I was perpetually misunderstood. Nobody understood my career or my lifestyle. They didn't get that I wasn't on vacation. They didn't get that I was working. So I was just constantly swimming against this stream of misconception and misunderstandings. And I was constantly feeling just very, very like I didn't belong or I was misunderstood fundamentally in a lot of different ways. And so I burnt out in 2018. I didn't even know what I didn't know anymore. I needed this sense of belonging. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna go back to Canada and I'm going to get a home base because I need my people. Because what I thought I was looking for was a cultural sense of belonging. I thought maybe I had culturally lost the plot. And I got back to Canada and I set up a place in Toronto, which is my hometown. The universe conspired to give me a really fabulous deal on an apartment that would allow me to use it as and when I want as a base and not have to, but also would allow me to continue to travel at whatever pace I wanted, which for me, on average, I try to do half of every year, but sometimes it's less. Sometimes I'm here less than I travel more or less, doesn't really matter. But I did also quickly figure out that in fact, actually, if I was looking for my people in Canada, Canada was not my people. And that the people that I was looking for that community. I was looking for my people are the people who work location independently and travel as and when they want and have that as a foundational pillar of their life and their priorities. And have that kind of almost the cultural mindset to live and work around the world. So I quickly realized that it's great to have a home base. So yes, I do have a place in Toronto. This is where I'm calling in from right now. And it's great to have a place to unpack, unwind, chill. I have a kitchen full of, you know, accoutrements that are fun to, you know, so I can do my cooking and the things that I enjoy doing while I decompress from travels and assimilate my experiences. But really for me, the community sense comes in hitting the road and spending time with other people who share the same lifestyle. And things like the Bansko Nomad Fest that we were just at are great opportunities to do that and to really get to know a lot of different people and make friends who these friendships follow us around the world in really interesting ways. So, you know, I have one friend in particular. We went on a big train trip last year and then we met again this year and then we're going to see each other in a few months somewhere else. And you kind of cross paths with this network of nomads that you've befriended along the way. And it can be really rewarding from a friendship standpoint. And also the quality of time that you spend together is really deep. Yeah. When you are traveling and co-living with people, you get a chance to go really deep with those friendships and those relationships quite quickly. So you can really forge some really strong bonds.
Yeah. And with people who get it, like you said, where you don't have to explain or answer questions about your lifestyle and I do work, but and maybe it's not until you go back to where you came from that you realize how much you've changed when other people haven't, and how much you need people who understand that lifestyle and that space. And it sounds like you've built the most amazing networks, truly global, not only to support your financially sustainable lifestyle, but also to support your emotional connections and social connections as well. So I think that's going to be really inspiring for everybody listening to this and wondering, could I do it? Would it work for me? Maybe there's enough people out there that you will find your tribe wherever you go now. Do you think there are particular locations or destinations or parts of the world that you've got your eye on for the future that maybe you haven't discovered yet? I know you've been to nearly every country, but what are you excited about for the future now?
I've hardly been to every country. For someone who's been on the road as long as I have, people are quite astounded that I've only actually traveled to and lived in about 70 countries, which that's a big number, but that's, maybe a third of the world at best. And it's never been on my list to see every country in the world. I'm not interested in the tick list. Right. I'm interested in the experiences.
Yep.
And I'm interested in traveling slowly and really experiencing what it's like to live around the world rather than travel through it. So, what's on my list? You know, it's funny you should mention, generally speaking, my destinations choose me rather than the other way around. And they usually choose me in the form of an interesting opportunity, right? Whether it's an opportunity to stay with someone or speak at a conference or do this trip with a bunch of people who are doing a trip or a house sitting gig or a volunteer opportunity. There's usually some reason for me to get on a plane and go somewhere. And then that generally informs the rest of my experience in that country or that destination. So I tend not to have specific kind of like hit list of places to go, but there are definitely regions of the world I'd like to explore more of because I haven't been or explored much of. So I was recently in Montenegro and Bulgaria, two amazing countries in the Balkans. I would love to see more of the Balkan regions. In 2019, I spoke at a conference in Latvia, also my first Baltic country. So I'd like to spend some more time there and Lithuania and Estonia, those being the Baltic countries. So those are two regions that are definitely interesting to me. I wouldn't mind getting back to certain places in Africa. I have a possibility of maybe going on a safari slash climbing Kilimanjaro with some friends. I may or may not do that. more of, I mean, Uruguay in South America has my number as well. I haven't been there yet, but I'm curious about it. But again, you know, I just leave myself open to whatever opportunities might be coming. There are also some specific co-living communities that I'm interested in seeing how they work. Madeira, of course, is one that is very well known.
We've got Gonzalo on next week, so we're looking forward to
perfect. All
more
right.
About
well,
that.
Gonzalo, yes. Shout episode. Out to Gonzalo. He's amazing, and he's also really, there's something that's really heartening. There's a fine line. If we talk about social responsibility or cultural exploitation, there are challenges with this lifestyle in that it's very easy to show up at a destination and hang out with nothing but other foreigners and expats and not actually integrate into the destination at all. And the challenge, because of course we'd always just tribal human beings, we tend to congregate with people of our own kind, whatever that means, whether it's people who speak the same language or who look the same or who have the same lifestyle. So I'm always cognizant of being very careful in the places that I go of making sure that I am on the right side of the line of exploitation. I like, you know, it's currency arbitrage. Global arbitrage is a pillar for a lot of digital nomads. You earn money in a strong currency. You use that money in a country that has a weaker currency. It allows your money to go further, and it also benefits the country in that you are spending that money there. So you're injecting foreign income into a place. However, it is important to make sure that that money is actually getting into the hands of locals and not foreign-owned establishments and conglomerates. It's important to make sure that you are networking and socializing with local people as well, because if you're not, and I've seen this happen in a variety of expat and digital nomad hubs, the local residents and citizens can become resentful because they feel used. You know, all these people are coming here and they're just minding their own business and there's no attention to actually having any kind of dialogue. And that can be problematic. So it's definitely important to make sure there's a great relationship. And people like Gonzalo in places like Madeira, I believe, and I haven't seen this yet from my own eyes, but I do believe he's quite attentive to making sure that this is a beneficial relationship for everybody involved. And I want to see how that works.
Yes, definitely. I'm looking forward to unpacking that with him. But I know that for the work he does, it's all about community and avoiding those sort of bubbles of ghettos, which I'm all too well aware of as a Brit living in Spain. I know there are people who've been here for decades and barely left that enclave of fellow English-speaking only Brits with their imported food. And okay, they, you know, they have the hot weather and the beaches, but they have no other benefits of living in a completely different culture. And that seems to suit them very well, sadly. So there you go. There are lots of different ways of doing this. I think your style of financially sustainable travel has so much to recommend it. And I think it's going to inspire a lot of our listeners. If somebody just wants to take the next step, what would you advise them as a first move? If the minute they stop listening to this podcast and think, I want to do this, what should they do next?
Well, hang on to your hats because I got a present for everybody who's listening who wants that next step.
Yay.
If you go to theprofessionalhobo.com/free gift, I have made you a checklist of 10 things to do before you travel long term. And these are 10 things to do, consider, have, you know, whatnot, in order to start arranging your affairs so that you can travel long term, stress-free, effectively, and in all the right ways.
Brilliant. So this is the learned experience, do as I say rather than as I did it guide from your perspective.
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic. We will definitely put that link in the show notes so that people have a sustainable way to jump off and start dabbling with this lifestyle. Maybe we'll see you along the road somewhere at a co-working or a festival or halfway up a mountain. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we go, Nora? This has been so interesting.
This has been a fabulous conversation. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the invite to have this chat. I love talking about this love style, lifestyle. If you go to my website, not only you're going to find educational content, but you're also going to find tales of my adventures and misadventures alike. So if you are an armchair style traveler and you want to get the deal, because writing and creative writing has always been my first and foremost passion, and I tend to let her rip on my website. So if you check the destinations page, and you can read lots of interesting tales about natural disasters and kangaroos that followed me around and apprenticeships with shamans and all kinds of other strange and wonderful things. I also have a YouTube channel. So if you search Nora Dunn or Nora Blue Skies on YouTube, you can find me there. And I have everything from years of travel vlogs and adventures to more recently, I host the Remote Work and Travel Show, where I speak with ordinary people who have extraordinary travel lifestyles and remote careers in order to get the real dirt on what it's like to travel long-term while working remotely. The show is currently on hiatus, but I have a few years of episodes for you to catch up on in the meantime. So please do visit me there and subscribe and mash the button and do the thing and the stuff.
Fantastic. Well, there's so much there to whet your appetite and give everybody itchy feet. I'm going to wrap this up so you can go and pack. Thanks ever so much, Nora.
Thanks, Maya.
You've been listening to the Future is Freelance podcast, brought to you by Zolo.io, who offer compliance, taxation, invoicing, and admin solutions for fiercely independent solopreneurs across the globe. From simply getting paid to launching a full EU-based limited company, Zolo has you covered, thanks to Estonian e-residency and a superb suite of streamlined business software. If you enjoyed the show, please like, rate, and comment, and subscribe to our feed wherever you get your podcasts.